You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website RickAckerman.com. He's speaking to us from South Florida. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks much for inviting me on, Jim. It is always a pleasure.
Rick, the stock markets, I noticed they're all down today except for the Toronto Venture Exchange, which deals with commodities and mining and so on. What's going on there?
Yeah, it looks like U.S. stocks are taking a little bit of a whack today. The E-mini S&Ps are down 42 points. Dow's off nearly 600. So they're getting hit today. And if you kind of match it against the headlines are pretty almost inspired, you know, this idea that we're going to save so much from Doge cuts that it's going to get U.S. is going to send out $5,000 checks to every taxpayer. And boy, if that don't lift them today, I don't know what will.
Do you think they'll actually go through with $5,000 checks, or is this a promise that a lot of governments make? We saw here in British Columbia, they promised $1,000 checks. That's now off the table.
Well, I think it's kind of a trial balloon, you know. But I don't know how many Americans share this this feeling, but I'd feel guilty taking that $5,000 because it's so obvious that the money isn't there. I mean, it'd be great, but I don't know. It's a little bit much, and it's so clearly not deserved, warranted in any way. It's like, here you are, folks. You're not supposed to push it as bread in circuses. Everybody's supposed to enjoy it without thinking too much about what it all means. But I hope they don't distribute that money.
Now, the stock market itself, ignoring this possible cash payout, how would you describe what's happened to the Trump rally?
Yeah, well, more today is kind of what it is. The market is looking sad, but more broadly, I think you could say that the firepower of MAGA is has diminished somewhat. So the Trump effect, I don't know whether it's premature to say it's dying, but maybe they've gotten as much mileage out of Trump promises as we're going to get.
Where does the stock market go from here?
Well, good question. Of course, I've been saying it can only go down, but of course I've been saying that since 2009. But we're a little bit pumped up here, and I just think that we've got to deflate a bubble, and there's no predicting what day or hour that'll begin, but it's coming. I think maybe we're in a little bit of a last gasp rally. And there is that question. We've seen the market sort of shrug off pretty much everything for years and years and years. Even there was a period there a few years ago where we had two quarters where earnings were really dismal. And not only did stocks not discount that, but when the lousy earnings started coming in, stocks were moving higher. So the market is somewhat inured to reality. It just wants to move higher. And we can't discount the possibility that we're going to have one last ridiculous, for no good reason, blow up. No matter how bearish you are and how many reasons you can bring, you can think up for why the stock market is ripe for a big fall. It can always take that last leg up just to scare hell out of bears and create a bit of short covering. So I think if we do get a rally, it won't be too significant. I could see maybe 400 points, 300 to 400 on the S&Ps. It's currently trading around, the mini S&Ps are around 6120 right now. But I could see up to 6600, 6700. But again, you gotta look at that and be prepared to react if things should take it. Sudden header.
Is there any place you think right now that would be a much safer haven than the stock markets?
Well, I used to say bonds more or less reflexively, and I'm still unpersuaded that the bond rally is for real, and meaning if it's not and bonds relapse, we're going to have higher interest rates. And, of course, that's definitely not what the world needs right now, rates pushing up on the long-term treasury paper up above 5%. I think that's where they're going, but I'm respecting the rally. Bonds have been moving higher, treasury paper, since mid-January. So we've got a pretty good rally, but the T-bond futures themselves are around 115, and they need to take out a peak that is up, let's say 121 is what they need to suggest that this rally is for real. But the bad news is that if rates are headed down significantly, it probably means we're going to be in deep recession at some point in the not-too-distant future.
Now, gold, it's been climbing, I think, since November, December. Is it going to stop?
It'll stop somewhere. But I think, you know, gold's in a pretty good bull market here. It just broke out today relative to some technical resistance I've had. I've had a $3,040 target on the April COMEX gold, and that's from levels way below here. It's looked like it was going above 3,000 for the last 300 or 400 points. So it just broke out today, and the April COMEX currently trading off a high today of 29.73. So we've got about a little less than $70 above today's high to get to a target at 3040 that I think is going to put up a little bit of resistance, or maybe even a lot of resistance for gold. So I'll be really interested to see how it does with that, what I call a hidden pivot resistance. And if it blows through it with enough force, I'll be able to say, well, maybe we're actually going to 3,500 or 4,000. But it's a good solid bull. And I don't know. I guess if you try to figure out why, there's always that reason. It's just a dangerous, interesting world.
Also, is it a factor at all that consumers have easier access to physical gold at Walmart and Costco? Well, I can go in and buy a wafer. Because for the average person, brokers and brokerage firms, that's all very confusing. When it's right there by the checkout stand or wherever they sell it, you can buy it.
Yeah, but gold's still at the price it trades at. It's not an impulse buy. It's not like buying chewing gum or something. And even relative to countries where the sovereign entity, China, India, where they encourage their people to buy gold and hold gold, compared to them, U.S., it's we're not at the point where we're buying gold at at filling stations. So I think the impact of gold's availability is negligible, really. And if anything, the impact of Bitcoin's availability is probably much more significant. And it's why Bitcoin has drawn some of the speculative fervor that might ordinarily go into gold. There's no question that if Bitcoin didn't exist, gold would be trading a lot higher.
Gold a lot more solid, though, literally, than Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's. I've heard some people, fools, say, yeah, they'll gladly trade their gold coins for Bitcoin anytime, but you got to be nuts, really, to take something that exists only in a virtual sense and trade it for something with gold's fine thousands years history. Everything starts to unravel. We'll see really how much Bitcoin gets exchanged or gold gets exchanged for Bitcoin, because I think gold's going to do a lot better in the difficult, extremely difficult times that we're going to face sometime somewhere up the road.
And I've already heard from so many people, Bitcoin, one of the problems is you never know you're actually getting into a secure Bitcoin exchange. They go out of business, they steal your money, whereas gold, at least if you put it under the floorboards, you know where it is.
That's true. I mean, you don't, and for all the claims that are made about the benefits of Bitcoin, if the power should go out, you may find yourself without any Bitcoin at all. Bitcoin can be erased, gold cannot. I wouldn't be feeling nearly as secure with a massive pile of Bitcoin. You could fit, by the way, every Bitcoin ever minted, close to 20 million, into something no bigger than a thimble, because it doesn't exist at the molecular level. It's all virtual. So we've talked about Bitcoin quite a bit, and I don't think it's going to end well. There are so many brands of cryptocurrency right now, so many boutique flavors, that it's going to be even worse than the last time when Bitcoin came down from initial record highs up around 70,000 down into the teens. All those 2,000 flavors of boutique cryptocurrency were virtually worthless, and we're going to come back to that eventually. But there's a good story in Wired about a kid. His parents sort of encouraged him to play with the computer, and one day he told them that he'd made a good deal of money with some Bitcoin application online that allows you to simply create your own little cryptocurrency. And he did that, and there are no there's no attempt really to hide the naked speculative aspect of these markets. You're just in there. In fact, I think the word hype or pump, it was maybe called pump, and that was the idea of it. It was just fun, and you could create coin, crypto coin, but there was real money involved at some point, and the trick was to create a cryptocurrency and get out of it in an hour or two for a profit. So this kid made some enormous money on it, and he said, well, I didn't really mean to do this, and he pissed off a lot of people in this game. And they came after him, and they started making threats against his parents. And he said, well, I'm going to give it all back. And he tried, and then he couldn't stay away from the game, and he created things, some additional crypto coinage that he labeled clearly, you know, this is toxic. This is here's plutonium coin or whatever you want to call it. And he still, I think the epilogue was he made $5,000 that day just creating coins that were named to cause you to cause buyers to be very skeptical about getting involved. So we're pretty late in the game, really, when a 14-year-old kid can make millions of dollars in a day just creating something that has no tangible existence.
President Trump did the same thing with his meme coin, and then Melania did it.
Yeah, it just goes to show you anybody can do it, really. And if you've got a brand name, like if you were LeBron and you created a coin, you could make enormous money just for being LeBron and having a nice collectible token.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, I guess we should have the Ricky Jim coin or the Jimmy Rick.
Yeah, I don't know if we're ever going to get to that, really, but... In the future, you know, Warhol said we'll all be famous for 15 minutes, and it's possible that yes, we'll all have 15 minutes of being multimillionaires or billionaires.
Well, I've been on radio and TV all my life, so yeah, at some point you can be famous, and in the end, you still end up dead. No matter how famous you are.
Well, they say you can't take it with it, but if you get a nice spacious coffin, you can take certainly a lot. Yeah. So your favorite neckties for sure.
And you can't buy love, but you can rent it. Taking a look, AI, is it still as hot as it was, or is it getting a little sticky?
It's somewhat less hot. Mm. You know, we had a an AI story killer a month ago with the news that China had produced a variant of AI that could do everything the most evolved U.S.-developed AI could do. It could do it cheaper and all that. And there were some pretty good stories. Zero Hedge said, well, this is the end of the world, really, because if you're deflating a bubble as big as the AI bubble, the trillions of dollars that got thrown at everybody's AI solutions, then if you deflate that, that's economically significant at a global level. So predictably, from day one, the mainstream media and the AI mounted a pretty good counterattack. The Wall Street Journal hacks put out a story that had 10 good reasons why the U.S. AI was still superior, that the Chinese thing was overrated, and it was you were meant to read this story and kind of yawn about the end of the world story, the Chinese entry into the markets. And then the U.S. AI franchise came back even harder. They said, well, the Chinese claim that they developed an AI generator much more cheaply was a lie, that China had vastly underreported the amount of money they spent developing it. And also, one of the reasons supposedly the Chinese made this supposedly huge jump in AI technology was that they were restricted in the number of the mega processors they could buy from NVIDIA. And I think, I can't remember, a figure was they bought 14,000 of them, but supposedly they used a lot more chips to do it. And that most of the smarts that you found in this new Chinese product, DeepSeek, were just cribbed from the NVIDIA chips. So the Chinese, and that wouldn't be unusual for the Chinese to steal pretty much everything that they claim is a success. I'm not saying they're not smart enough to eventually find their way to some of the things that that our Caltech and MIT graduates create, because the Chinese are just as smart, but they've certainly found a lot of ways to shortcut the process, and of course, the easiest way to do that is to steal every piece of technology you can get your hands on. So the Chinese do that a lot better than they do actual development, and so there the DeepSeek story rests, you know, and I think eventually it will play out as a huge deflation of the AI bubble. AI hubris, trillions of dollars worth of it in the companies like AI and all the other players. Musk was in there with his own statement that his AI is already, it could blow away anything China has produced or even is likely to produce. So it's all kind of a jumble, but I think you can take a step back and say it got pretty inflated. And I don't know where, I try to read as much about it as I can, and it's really hard to figure out whether guys like that would be interviewed by Stephen Levy and Wired, who are saying, oh yeah, you ain't seen nothing yet. We're AI is at a threshold right now where it's going to so greatly exceed everybody's expectations and imagination. Only the insiders really know what's coming soon. But and then there's the other side of it, from people like me, who whenever I'm using autocorrect to text message somebody, and my AI, the AI from autocorrect, it can't get three words right. You know, it misspells everything. It puts periods in my text randomly, and it's dumb as a sack of bolts. So I guess the truth about what I AI can do is somewhere in the middle. But for the time being, you can just bet that it's going to put a lot of people out of work. That's its primary. That's what's moving it forward right now.
Now, some of the articles I've read about AI. The latest one, apparently, it's too much like people in that it starts to age out. It's although it's It's numerical skills are okay. It's what they call executive skills. Decision-making starts to fade. In other words, if you've been running an AI program for too long, maybe it forgets its keys like the rest of us old guys. Forgets where we put our keys.
Well, that'd be interesting. I don't know. I hope it doesn't do as much forgetting as I do. But if that happens, AI is going to be out of business in 6 months. But I don't know where... I just sense, really, that the main force impelling AI development is this the imperative of putting people out of work. And even though you look through, history gives us a lot of examples where some technology that was going to destroy the economy wound up creating more jobs than it destroyed. But this time it's different. It really is different. The AI has the potential to displace a lot of non-essential workers. I have to say I'm not worried at all, because when I see what AI writes about the stock market, or when it starts getting into ideas, there's no originality, right? There's no originality, no imagination, no sort of venturing more than one standard deviation outside of the status quo, the norm. So AI does a terrible job where there's a little bit of creativity involved or imagination, but it's terrific for legal boilerplate, and it's very quick. It's good for coding, developing your own applications, and so on and so forth. And whether we're going to self-destruct with those capabilities is still open to speculation.
Yes, a Vancouver lawyer received a severe tongue lashing from a judge. She used AI to prepare a case, and three of the precedents that AI cited in her brief were just made up. Easily be a politician then. They just make things up.
Well, we talked before about AI in the courtroom. If you put a little AI black box in the middle of the courtroom, in theory, it should possess every word in every law, case history. It should have the whole congressional library of legal precedent in it. So I wouldn't think it would have to cheat and invent legal precedents to win a case. But to me, knocking off lawyers is an obvious trick that AI should be able to perform. It's got total recall on all case histories, and I think it's also capable of citing cases in an imaginative way, or let's say in a tactical or strategic way. So it's good by lawyers, but you can bet they're not going to go quietly into the night.
Well, the lawyers will still file the case. It's just AI did all the work while they're in the bar having an extra martini.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering about the $2,000 an hour lawyers, because there, I guess they get paid $2,000 an hour because they know all the ins and outs. But the ins and outs, to me, don't seem beyond the reach of AI. So it looks to me like AI can pretty much cover the whole spectrum of legal talent, from paralegals and the grunt work and the boilerplate to the $2,000 an hour kind of thinking through how do we win this this trademark case, patent case, or whatever.
Right. Now, of course, lawyers do know how different judges want evidence presented and what they're more susceptible to or experts in as well. Could AI acquire that skill?
Yeah, and that may be the wild card, really, because a lot of winning a trial is getting it heard in the right venue by the right judge. And I'm not sure. I'd be interested to see whether AI is that clever, that devious, to arrange for Judge Burke in the Fifth Circuit Court to hear a certain case that he seems to. Where the outcome is relatively predictable.
And how big could AI become in personal relationships? Bill Maher cited a recent survey where young Americans say 20% of them say they might prefer a relationship with an AI partner rather than a real one because, well, the AI one is always nice to you. They never throw a dish at you or a cup.
Well, you know, we've been worried about the kids for a long time, and I don't know. They certainly are not getting the benefits I felt I had growing up in the 1950s, and the kids are all pretty weird. So if that's what they're saying, instead of like hooking up and getting stuck with the cost of a bottle of wine or something, if you can just sit down next to, I don't know, you'll have to flesh out the AI if you're going to watch a movie and have popcorn with it one night. But yeah, the kids are all, they're pretty weird.
Yeah, also, you know, AI's not going to bring you a nice cup of tea when you're sick in bed. Or will it, I guess, maybe a little robot pops out. Hi, baby, here's your tea.
Yeah, I think home robotics is, it's technologically within reach. It's just not cost effective yet. That there really could be a robot that could make you the perfect cup of tea. That's already there. But they just haven't figured out a way to get that into your home for less than $1.8 million.
What's going on with uranium?
Funny you should ask. I don't track uranium that closely. You know, the story, it's almost like coal. The story's been around forever, and it's always trying to evolve in a positive way. But you know, when you see, who was it, Zuckerberg wanted, he's talking about building his own power sources, nuclear plants from small reactors. So I think, and because nuclear is the only way we're really going to alter the pie chart of where we get our energy from, to alter it significantly and relatively quickly, it's the story will always be, the uranium story will always be positive. So I don't track the ups and downs of the uranium stocks, but it seems like a good, wholesome story to me. It's just not outlandish.
Anything else? Oh, copper. Copper's really had a resurgence.
Yeah, and I guess that's part of this being an increasingly wired world. There was a time 30 years ago when we believed that there'd be no use for copper, that if for instance the whole continent of Africa were to go just install a phone system, that it would all be the network would be satellite rather than copper. And of course in that instance wasn't so much the phone system that demands all the copper, it's pretty much everything else. So copper made a fairly important high back in last May, and a little above $5 a pound. We're trading 460 right now on the futures contract, and it looks like it's having a little struggle. I have trouble seeing copper go to new record highs, and I think the recent high about $4.83. That may be it for a while.
Rick, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
Well, just everything, because there's so many things that could go wrong right now. The market, of course, has always been priced for perfection, but we were talking earlier about how it seems to be struggling a little bit more than we're used to for loft. And I would caution against trying to milk the last drop of bull market from this bull market. Because the gates of hell could open up pretty much any time now.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
And thank you, Jim, for inviting me on. It is always a pleasure.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our other guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on X @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
comments made on HowStreet.com Radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.